Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Minnesota Democrat Tina Smith, who sits on the Senate Ag Committee. She joins us to discuss the latest on the Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Biden administration released rules for the 40B tax credit for sustainable aviation fuel. Corn won't qualify unless it's grown with three climate-smart practices: no-till, cover crops, and energy-efficient fertilizer. Soybeans won't qualify unless producers use both cover crops and no-till. Farmers must also have certification that the crops were grown with climate-smart practices. The 40B credit will be replaced next year by a more expansive tax credit called 45Z. The rules for that credit have yet to be written. The Food and Drug Administration has affirmed the safety of milk and other dairy products after more tests show no active traces of the bird flu. The agency has tested nearly 300 samples of milk from across the country, and no viable traces of the virus have been found. The agency is warning people to not drink raw milk. USDA's chief veterinary officer says dairy cattle in Texas likely got infected by wild birds. The department also thinks the virus wasn't always spreading from cow to cow. Sometimes it was spread through equipment or other items. And finally, leaders of the House and Senate Ag Committees released plans for a farm bill. House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson released an outline of a new farm bill, which includes improvements to commodity programs and crop insurance, as well as provisions to prevent states from regulating animal welfare outside their borders. Meanwhile, Senate Ag Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow released a more detailed summary of her bill called the Rural Prosperity and Food Act. Some of her proposals include providing permanent authorization for conservation programs, as well as making some changes to commodity programs. The bill also would make high levels of area-based crop insurance more affordable. Democratic Senator Tina Smith also sits on the Senate Ag Committee and represents Minnesota farmers. She says the chairwoman's bill is one that will greatly benefit her constituents.
I think this bill, which is built on over 100, I think, bipartisan provisions that I and others have worked on across the aisle, is a really strong proposal. And just you mentioned crop insurance, which is, I think, sort of the cornerstone of the ag provisions in the farm bill. And I'm really happy to see some improvements to crop insurance, particularly for how it can work for smaller farmers, beginning farmers, as we're seeing this massive transition, generational transition. With regard to the commodity program, you know, Chair Stabenow has put some modest increases in the reference prices for the commodity program. And she, this is important, and she pays for it. She has a way of paying for it. And when I'm at home talking to Minnesota farmers, their number one thing is strong crop insurance. And so I think they're going to be happy with this.
House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson released a summary of the farm bill that he has been working on, but Ranking Member David Scott released a statement rejecting his proposal. Where do you see the areas of concern with Chairman Thompson's proposal?
Well, so I think what we're going to see is negotiations happening between the Senate and the House with these two proposals. And the reason I think that the Democrats in the House are rejecting the Thompson proposal is because it is a pretty partisan proposal in several respects. One, there really isn't a way to pay for the significant increases in the commodity program that he's proposing. Two, he is proposing cuts to the nutrition program, which he knows the Democrats won't accept. There's always been this grand bargain between the farm programs and the nutrition programs in order to get bipartisan support. His bill doesn't have that. But I would point out to folks that there's, in other areas, there's some pretty significant overlap and common ground between what Chair Stabenow released and what the Republican proposal in the House is. And so I think that could be a basis for negotiations that could get us to a final bill.
And you mentioned that Chair Stabenow has a way to pay for the changes in crop insurance. Can you walk us through where that money is coming from?
Well, so she has an agreement with the leader, the Democratic leader in the Senate, and also bipartisan understanding that we, in order to do what we want to do in the Senate Democratic Farm Bill, which a bipartisan bill, you need a little bit more money. And she has an agreement that we can find that money in order to up the total amount of the bill by the what we would need in order to do these improvements to the commodity program. And, you know, I always remind people that the great benefit of crop insurance is that, if you're not in farming, you might not realize this, the great benefit of crop insurance is that it is providing you with an insurance coverage for the crops that you're growing. The commodity program is based on base acres. And so sometimes you have producers that are actually getting getting a reference price for a product that they're not even growing. And I think that's why in Minnesota, people tend to put crop insurance first.
So Chairman Thompson also scheduled votes or action on his bill for May 23rd. And the American Farm Bureau Federation is calling on Chair Stabenow to schedule votes on her bill as well. What do you think the holdup is that she hasn't announced that yet?
Well, I think I take a couple of points of optimism here. I noted yesterday when Chair Stabenow released her very detailed proposal, there's text there, that we heard positive things from the ranking member, Senator Bozeman, and I think that that bodes well. I honestly think that the holdup has been just a kind of the negotiations have gotten bogged down. And understanding that, Chair Stabenow, who really wants to figure out a way of breaking this loose, decided that the thing to do was to put out her proposal. Usually what happens is that the bill gets negotiated in a bipartisan way and there's a bipartisan proposal. But since that wasn't working, she took the step. I think it was a good step, and I hope that we'll be able to move forward soon in the Senate and then get these negotiations between the House and the Senate done so we can get a bill.
We'll be right back with more from Senator Smith right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. In Chairwoman Stabenow's Farm Bill text, she says it will help strengthen small and mid-sized dairy operations. Senator Tina Smith explains how it will do that.
I've worked very hard on the dairy margin coverage program. Dairy is an important part of Minnesota's food and ag sector. And it was quite clear that the old way of doing the old way of doing it wasn't working. And so everybody tells me in Minnesota that the dairy margin program is an improvement, but it still needed to have some additional improvements in order to make it work better for smaller producers. And so I think that that's what Chair Stabenow has been working on doing. I really support that, and I look forward to hearing from Minnesota producers about how they see this.
And what do you see as the biggest challenges facing dairy farmers today?
Well, you know, dairy farmers are dealing with so much uncertainty. Right now, milk prices are like decent. They're not great. They're not terrible. But they're experiencing a lot of the same challenges that other farmers are experiencing. You've got high input costs. You've got labor challenges. And then, of course, we have issues with trade. And it's why I've been pushing so hard to make sure that our neighbors to the north in Canada are living up to their agreements in the USMCA so that we have a fair and even playing field with American milk products. So all of those things are happening at the same time that we also see a lot of consolidation in dairy, and that makes it harder for smaller producers to hold it together. The creameries and what's going on with creameries and the loss of creameries has also been an issue in Minnesota. So as always, farmers are dealing with a bunch of stuff as they're trying to figure out how to have a profitable operation.
Mm-hmm. So the Biden administration released this week new rules for a new tax subsidy for sustainable aviation fuel. But farm groups are saying that it's going to be very difficult for growers to meet all of the requirements for climate smart agriculture practices. In addition to that, your colleague on the House side, Representative Craig, has long advocated for inclusion of biofuel production in the sustainable aviation fuel market. And earlier this year, she led by a bipartisan push to urge that the Biden administration to ensure biofuels are appropriately utilized in efforts to decarbonize aviation, the aviation industry. With all of that said, do you think the administration got the announcement right this week?
Well, so I, first of all, I think there's a huge opportunity around sustainable aviation fuels, a huge market growth opportunity. And farmers, especially farmers in the upper Midwest, where I'm from, just have a, there's just nothing but upside here. And it is going to be a really important way, the primary way for us to decarbonize the aviation sector. I wish that the Biden administration had moved a little quicker on getting this standard out there. But, you know, what I'm hearing at home is a sort of a, this is a positive step. They're glad that this new standard is based on the, you know, the GREET model, which has been important. And I think it feels more predictable to Minnesota producers. And, you know, there's a very specific standard that maybe some folks will think is a little too high. There probably will others who think it's a little bit too low when it comes to the amount of carbon reductions that you have to achieve in order to get this tax credit. My impression from folks at home is they're sort of like, well, let's see how this works. And it's a step in the right direction. And there may need to be more done down the road.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with this week's panel discussion. But first, our Andrew Henneke explains a recent survey that takes a look at what Americans think about food and agricultural issues in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The most recent Gardner Food and Agricultural Policy Survey asked what Americans think about food and agricultural issues. This chart shows groups in the food system in the U.S. and if people thought they had too much control or share of the market. Those who responded seem to be concerned about how big food manufacturers and grocery stores are currently. Those numbers were nearly 68 and 52% respectively. On the other hand, people didn't seem as concerned about the size for restaurants and farms. Nearly 36% thought restaurants were too big, and only 19% said the same for farms. If you're interested in more data from the survey, you can watch last week's episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we talk about the places people think are charging too much for food, as well as the quality of products sold from different sized food companies. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honegie.
As farmers, we need to be able to count on programs that make us successful for the future.
These programs help farmers better their production, their practice, at a cost that they can afford.
You're squawking over $20 billion, that USDA program. It's investment into the future for everybody. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
Register now for the 2024 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. This summit takes place on June 4th in Sacramento and through our virtual experience. See the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we will continue our discussion on the Farm Bill and sustainable aviation fuel. Joined this week by Tara Smith with the Tory Advisory Group and Brian Jennings with the American Coalition for Ethanol. And Tara, my first question is for you. So we saw Senate Ag Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow release a detailed summary of her Farm Bill this week. And in that, there was some new provisions for crop insurance, but only modest changes. You know, do you think her changes go far enough?
You know, I think we really appreciate their acknowledgement that we've had some issues with the program recently around actuarial soundness and some of the concerns that we've had there. Really appreciate her addressing affordability issues for beginning farmers and ranchers and for farmers who want to buy up higher levels of coverage. You know, we're anxious to see full text of the bill to work on it. I know that they've talked to us and many others about this being a starting point. And I think more than anything, we're just really excited that they've started the ball rolling.
Now, the House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson also released a draft of his farm bill, but we saw Ranking Member David Scott releasing a statement rejecting his proposal. Are the two sides any closer in coming together after this week?
You know, I mean, the cliche is that it's making sausage when you're making legislation. And I think we're seeing that really clearly right now. And so maybe some of the ingredients that are going into the process right now from both the Senate and the House side don't look all that pretty to folks, or they might want to see changes, but these are necessary steps. You've got to take these steps in order to hopefully end up with a bipartisan package at the end of the day that will be a good bill for all the different stakeholders that are involved in a farm bill. And so, you know, I think this is my sixth farm bill. It's easy to forget that these processes are not ever particularly pretty. You know, we've seen farm bills have to be split in by the nutrition and the farm titles. We've seen farm bills fail on the floor. We've seen them fail in committee. We've done subcommittee markups of farm bills. And so, you know, this process is always a bit tedious from the outside. But I think just the fact that we're making progress and we're seeing some real meat on the bones of proposals is a step forward. And I think everybody in the ag community is just hoping that we can find a real bipartisan path forward by starting the discussions.
And Brian, bringing you into the conversation here, both the House and the Senate have said that they are going to bring in the Inflation Reduction Act money into the baseline of the next farm bill. How could conservation programs and other provisions in the farm bill help spur the development of sustainable aviation fuel?
Well, I would say USDA is already doing a tremendous job in trying to really get sustainable aviation fuel off the ground through the IRA funding that they were provided, you know, billions of new dollars going into programs like the Regional Conservation Partnership Program run by the Natural Resources Conservation Service, for example. In fact, the American Coalition for Ethanol, my organization, was funded $25 million to work on a 10-state project to help install or adopt climate smart agriculture practices around 12 ethanol facilities around the country, to collect the data on the greenhouse gas benefits of those practices. And so I know that USDA is doing their level best to implement that as much as they possibly can, with a nod to how can we sustainably produce biofuels. I won't get into the battle of how you sort of capture that funding relative to the Farm Bill baseline. I'll leave that up to Congress, but I will say USDA is doing a tremendous job of trying to implement what they have right now.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe on agripulse.com or on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back. This week, the Biden administration released rules for a new tax subsidy for sustainable aviation fuel. Brian Jennings with the American Coalition for Ethanol says more flexibility is needed in the rule.
The best news is that ethanol producers who invest in carbon capture and sequestration technology, so those ethanol producers who invest in the ability to capture their fermentation CO2 and permanently store that, absolutely will meet the minimum and frankly may exceed the minimum threshold required from a greenhouse gas reduction standpoint. There were some questions about whether you'd need to stack CCS on top of another technology to get there, and that wasn't the case. So that's a very clear win. Now, I think where we have some issues is on the handling of climate smart agriculture practices. On the good end of things, USDA deserves a tremendous amount of credit for helping get our foot in the door. Hey, for the first time, we formally have the Treasury, the USDA, and the GREET model acknowledging that certain practices reduce greenhouse gases from crop-based biofuels. That is an important recognition. But I would say the all or none sort of approach that they're taking with these practices with respect to you've got to do no-till, you've got to do a cover crop and enhanced efficiency nitrogen fertilizer on acres that any corn bushels are destined for ethanol to SAF, that's not going to be workable, and we're going to have to find some flexibility with that longer term.
So Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says the 40B tax incentive for this year will influence the 45Z tax break for 2025. How do you think the rules need to be changed?
Well, first I'd say Secretary Vilsack is exactly right. So for your viewers and listeners, the 40B SAF tax credit expires at the end of this year, but January 1 of 2025, the new clean fuel technology tax credit, production tax credit, the 45Z kicks in. Aviation and non-aviation fuel will qualify for that as long as their carbon intensity is 50 kilograms of CO2 or less. And for every point under that 50 kilograms of CO2, you can earn $2 a gallon on aviation fuel or non-aviation fuel. I think in talking with USDA and talking with Treasury, we will see more flexibility. You will not see this all or none approach taken when it comes to climate smart agriculture, for example. So if a farmer is engaged in reduced tillage and maybe 4R nutrient management, that should be good enough to help make sure that that corn that farmer is raising that's destined for ethanol production that could go into sustainable aviation fuel is going to help bring down the overall ethanol carbon score to a place where it could meet the qualifications for sustainable aviation fuel.
And Tara, wrapping up our conversation with you, Chairman Thompson has scheduled a committee action on his bill for May 23rd. What are the chances that Chairwoman Stabenow will do the same?
Oh, goodness. I mean, that would be fantastic to see that kind of movement. In the conversations that we've had, I know she's really hopeful that there's going to be a bipartisan package that moves forward out of committee. And so I think that will really depend a lot on how the conversations over the next couple of weeks go between Ranking Member Bozeman and his team and Chairwoman Stabenow and her team. And hope springs eternal. They're able to come to some sort of agreement by that date, but that does seem pretty darn ambitious. We'll be ready either way.
Well, there's a lot to keep our eye on for the month of May and the upcoming summer. Tara, Brian, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke walks us through the number of dairy operations in the U.S. in this week's Map It Out.
Data from the most recent Census of Agriculture shows the number of dairy farms in every state decreased substantially between 2017 and 2022. And this map takes a closer look at those numbers. States like West Virginia, Alabama, Wyoming, and Montana all saw a decrease of more than 80%. Other states like Texas and Arkansas saw less than a 20% decrease. 40 states saw a decrease of more than 50%, and the country as a whole was down by more than 55%. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The Senate EPW Committee will hold hearings Wednesday on President Biden's fiscal year 2025 budget request for the EPA. USDA's monthly crop production report comes out next Friday. And finally, our Rebecca Alvey will be at the Food Safety Summit in Chicago Tuesday through Thursday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.